What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Money Maker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 199. Sponsored by InStock Trades, Netflix, and iFanboy listeners like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 199, if you can believe that. my name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And Josh is out on vacation, so we went to the bench, and we went to the greater podcasting bench, and we tapped Mr. Jason Wood from 11 O'Clock Comics.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Going very well. Thanks for coming on. I do enjoy the 11 O'Clock Comics, and even though we don't have drinks and we're a little shorter, hopefully it's just the comics talk will be enough for you.
It's true. I just have an intravenous hookup of alcohol into my system, so I don't have to talk about it.
Oh, well, you'll fit right in with us then.
I may have had a drink or two before the show. I'm not going to say I did.
It's not unknown. So, and I'll tell you guys, I might be in San Francisco, but it is hot.
It's cold here in New York.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, very cold.
Mm-hmm. Damn it. Anyway, nonetheless, so if you've never heard us before, we are from iFanboy.com, which is a website all about comics. And every week we read a bunch of comics that come out, and one of us picks the best issue that came out and dubs it the pick of the week, goes to our website at iFanboy.com, writes a review of it, and then we come here and discuss that book as well as the other books that came out that week, anything else of interest. But before we get started, quick warning to you that we're going to talk about what happened in the books, so we might, some people consider that spoiling them. So if you haven't read your books, you might want to press pause, come back after you read your books, or if you don't mind that, just be warned. So this week Connor has the pick, and Mr. Kilpatrick, take it away.
This week was awful for having the pick.
It really was.
I hated it. I was not happy. It was so many good books, and I was pissed off, and I couldn't decide, and I was annoyed, and I had things to do. But eventually Batman and Robin number 3 was the pick of the week, which is the third issue in a row that's been the pick of the week, and that hasn't happened since we had two in a row for Scalped, and before that, many, many years ago. I think it's been a while since we've had so many consecutive issues of one book be the pick of the week.
How do you know that?
Because I've got a brain like a steel trap. You remember back when no one listened and we used to do Queen and Country and Gotham Central all the time and you hated it?
Yes, I do actually remember that.
That was the time. That was back then when it always was Queen and Country.
Good choices, nevertheless.
Yeah.
But Batman and Robin is the book from Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, and it's to me, it's special. When I read this book, it doesn't feel like I'm reading every other superhero book. And I don't know why that is. It's this weird alchemy between Morrison and Quitely. And I think this is the book that people were expecting when Morrison first went to Batman. And they didn't get that book, but this is the one they're getting now. And it's an event when this comes out. And I don't know what it is between these two guys when they work together, that whatever comic knowledge between the two of them comes out. But it's a special book, and it's something that when I'm reading it, I don't ever want it to stop. And I don't ever want it to be over. And it's these two guys who, you know, they did All-Star Superman together, and they did We Three together. And those two were also special books. And this is another one. It's amazing. There's a whole bunch of new Batman books out, and they all are dealing with the same sort of subject matter, which is Bruce Wayne is gone, and Dick Grayson's the new Batman, and Damian's the new Robin. But this is the only one that really feels like that's actually happening. Whereas the other books are good, and Red Robin is the only other one, I think. But like Batman, it really doesn't feel like anything new is going on. And Detective is obviously on its own little bubble. But this is the one that actually feels like they're actually dealing with the fact that this is a new Gotham City, a new paradigm, a new world, new characters. And it's really refreshing because, as someone who's been reading Batman comics for at least 25 years, that's a world and characters who I've come to know really well and come to become really familiar. And it's rare that a book set in that world with these people feels so fresh and new. And this totally feels fresh and new. And it totally feels like it's dwarfing every other superhero effort. And I don't know why. I don't know if it's a combination of Morrison's keeping it dark, but also keeping it a touch of lightness and absurdity. And Frank Quitely's really fantastic art. and the fact that everything is really well thought out. This is the only book that Damian really looks like he's a 10-year-old, whereas every other book he looks like he's a late teenager. And this is the only book where they're drawing Batman to look like he's a different person, whereas when he shows up in Batman, he just looks like Bruce. He looks no different, whereas here you actually see a different person in the costume. Everything is well thought out. Everything is well planned. I feel like they're really making an effort with this book. I don't want to say that they're not making efforts in other books because that denigrates their work, but this really feels like they're really sort of thinking about everything that goes on the page. That really comes out in the work, and it's better than I thought. When I went into this book and bought issue one, I had high hopes, and it blew me away there. Two was even better, and three was just as good, and it's great, and it's sad at the same time because next month there's going to be a different artist, and it's going to be a different experience. But for right now, these three issues were really something special, I think.
So did you pick it because of the three issues and it's something special, or because of specifically this issue?
No, specifically this issue. I thought it continues along the same vein as the last two in that the art is spectacular. Quietly does these intricate fight scenes that you don't get in other books. Robin jumping on his fingertips and flipping over, and the thought and the effort that goes into the art, and the way that Grant Morrison really has this whole storyline down. He told this really rich story in three issues, and you'd expect it to be over six these days, but it was in three, and it really worked. And it came back around and tied into the end of R.I.P., which was the last scene in this book. It was the last scene in R.I.P. And it was just really well constructed, and it was just as strong as every other issue. And every other issue has been the best thing I've read in the last few months.
Interesting. Because I enjoyed it, but I actually thought this was the weakest of the three issues.
How come?
Really?
Yeah. Listen to me being the naysayer. I just thought, and of the three issues, and don't get me wrong, I think they're beautiful. I think I love Quietly's art and Grant Morrison. This is the good, the Grant Morrison that's not out there that makes sense. This isn't the filth kind of stuff. I just felt like this as being the last issue of this arc felt really kind of, the ending felt really kind of rushed. I didn't really feel the payoff with the face-off against the pig villain, who, by the way, it was, creepy. The shot of him across the room from Robin holding the drills, and he's kind of like askance, kind of in a flamboyant somewhat, kind of.
He begins his creepy dance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all of a sudden I hear Goodbye Horses while I'm reading that.
It was very David Lynch-y in that scene,
yeah,
I thought.
Yeah, it was. But I just felt as if the last issue was kind of rushed, and it didn't really have the great layout, any really like amazing layouts that the last two issues had. A couple of good pages that were just mind-blowing pages. This just felt like, okay, let's wrap this up, and it just felt kind of rushed to me. That was me. I could be wrong.
I mean, I know what you're saying, Ron, but I think it kind of speaks to the idea of we're so used to these 5-6 issue arcs now that it's almost like our brains are trained to expect a longer story. But I was kind of in Connor's camp, and that I thought it was refreshing to see it wrapped up so quickly and succinctly. And it also led into the next arc, I think, very cleanly, and it makes sense the way they did it. But I have to say, reading this, it was kind of melancholy. It probably would have been my pick of the week too, but I just, for me, the Morrison plus Quietly is a far cry better than Morrison plus
Don't say the name.
He who shall not be named.
It's gonna be, next month is gonna be a real bitter pill to swallow. It's gonna be tough.
But the thing is look, he introduced a new rogue who has, I'm sure we're gonna see more of him. I don't know how long Morrison plans on doing this book, but obviously he's left the door wide open for us to learn more about Pig. There's some hanging chads from that. I love the way Robin is portrayed here. You're seeing him get a teeny bit more respect for Dick, but Dick's
just a smidge, which is great.
Right, just a smidge. Like when he was like, "Did you actually just save my life?" Yeah. Like he's just, he's fighting and clawing to come to terms with the fact that Dick may in fact be his better, and he could learn something from him. But he's not going to do it, happily. And the great thing about Quietly's art for me is that, as you said, Connor, he draws him like a 10-year-old, and I think that has such an impact in the scene where he's tied up and then breaks free, and he, basically cuts to pieces three of the pig's henchmen. Yep. And you start to realize just how powerful that scene is. This is a 10-year-old boy. I mean, I have a 6-year-old son. My oldest son is 6. And it's hard to imagine him just a few years from now being such a badass that he could do something like that. But again,
you better watch out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm not actually a Ra's al Ghul, or my dad is. But you know what I mean? But this 10-year-old isn't a normal 10-year-old. He's not only brilliant, but he's been raised by the deadliest people on the earth. And he would be it would be almost inhuman the things he'd be willing and able to do. And I love that. So, yeah, I thought this was a very strong issue. And I'm just fingers crossed that I'll be pleasantly surprised for next issue.
So. I'm going to try not to go into it with too much of a negative attitude, but it was seeping into me reading this, but I was trying to really keep it at bay because it's hard not to think about the future when you know it's coming. But just focusing on this issue in general, I love the way that, as Wood said, it set up the next issue, but it also is a very clean like wave. Like this story ended, but it crested up again at the end, and it all tied together. And I loved the silent moment with Alfred arranging the pictures. And you even got a good sense of the family and the dynamics. I mean, you know, you got a scowling Damien to the side of Bruce and Dick and Alfred in that picture. And even the placement of the pictures really told the characterizations. And it was just everything in here is so intricately done. When you see a superhero book like this, you realize how good every superhero book could be if you had this level of talent or thought into all of those books. And there's all the great superhero books. We're going to talk about some of them. Yeah. And it's not to denigrate them all, but they could all be this good.
I do have to admit the "is Robin and Batman" line did make me laugh.
Yeah.
So that's towards the end. Yeah. No, I mean it's really, really good. Okay. I'll give you that.
Mm-hmm. I also love that you never saw Pig's face.
Yeah.
And not that it's a mystery. It's just that it made him more mysterious, which is different than being a mystery.
Right. You mentioned that in your review, and I agree with you. I don't think it's because there's any big reveal there. I just think it's because we want him to be mysterious.
Right. And it was a nice touch. There were shadows, something blocking it. And it was always, you never got to look at him. You know, it's like if you reveal who's behind the mask, it's never as scary as not knowing. And I think he's scarier in that sense. But a lot of good books. It was tough. I had three really strong contenders. The second one was Flash Rebirth number 4. I know there's a lot of people that don't like this book, but I love it. I didn't know what to expect going into Flash Rebirth because Barry is such an unknown quantity as opposed to Hal, who I knew, you know, in the modern sense when Green Lantern Rebirth happened. But I didn't know what to expect. This is unfolding better than I could have expected. And for me, this really gave the sense that hasn't happened in a while of the old Mark Waid, Geoff Johns Flash, where you had the whole family together, especially at the end when Max Mercury came back. I love tying together Eobid. How the fuck do you say that name?
Thawne. Just say Thawne.
Thawne. Reverse Flash and Barry, and making Barry the originator of the Speed Force. Because the Speed Force isn't a historical concept. It's a relatively new concept. So here's Geoff Johns tying it into Barry Allen. And then, of course, if he's the originator of the Speed Force, that means Thawne would have a reverse Speed Force. I just loved every aspect of this book.
Well, I mean, it's funny because a lot of people were talking about like kind of where is Rebirth number 4, because it's been a while since issue 3 came out. And when this came out, I realized what the delay was, because there's a whole lot of words in this book. Mm-hmm. Like this was it was heavy, this issue. I think probably the heaviest of them so far. And you know, and I love the Flash. He's my favorite DC character. I have a big lithograph in my apartment of him. And it was Geoff Johns' run that really cemented it for me. And it, like you said, is that idea of the greater Flash family. And, you know, it was Impulse and Max Mercury and Jay and Jesse Quick and Wally and all them. And it was great to see all those pieces coming together. And yeah, I have no complaints. I mean, I heard some people complaining about this book that there was too many references, that there's too much history to it and all this stuff. But like, I'm not like Tom Cater's and like knowing my knowledge of the Flash, but I totally get everything that's going on. I get the concept that he's doing, and it just looks beautiful. So it can't go wrong by me.
Mm. I'm a little torn on this one. I can't help but juxtapose it, as I'm sure many people do, against Green Lantern Rebirth. Yeah. And it's a similar experience for me in that when I read Green Lantern Rebirth, I had precious little prior experience with Green Lantern. And going into this, I had precious little experience with the Flash universe. And I just feel as I read it, while I'm enjoying it, I definitely get this feeling that it's not hitting me at an emotional level that Barry's back or that these characters are coming back, because I can't figure it out if it's because I just don't have much of a history with them in the first place, or just that it's a little too wordy and the writing is striking me as a little stiff. I don't know exactly what it is. Again, I don't want to make it seem like I'm not enjoying the book, sure. But it's definitely not something I would have considered, you know, a pick of the week for me. It was wordy, and the Speed Force to me, it's just like, okay, now we have the Speed Force, now we have the anti-Speed Force, and it just seems a little contrived, but I'm holding out hope because I do have a lot of faith in Johns, and I know that this is a passion project for him. So I have a sense that when we're done with the series, a lot of the things that are kind of have me scratching my head will be buttoned up quite nicely. And if that's the case, then, you know, I'm sure I'll look back fondly on this. But for right now, I'm sort of mixed on it.
Well, it's funny that you say that, because when Green Lantern Rebirth came out, what you just said about Flash Rebirth was mm-hmm. very similar to my feelings about Green Lantern Rebirth. I felt kind of like I felt very lukewarm about that series. I wasn't as, Hal's back. Like, it was just like, all right, mm-hmm. can we get on with this? You know, and it really wasn't until having them come back gets shoved out of the way and then you start telling real stories that it really kicks in.
Sure.
You know, and I just look at that last page of the book with Barry leading the pack and the four speedsters behind him, and like that's where we're going to get to. You know, and then the good stuff will come from that. So, I mean, I would say stick with it because John's it will pay off. John's knows what he's doing.
Also, I think if you don't have the history, it's not going to hit you as emotionally as people who've been reading. I mean, I've been reading Flash since junior high school, until recently when I dropped the book last year. But up until then, it had been like 12, 15 years of reading the Flash. So I have all those stories in my head. So I'd obviously have more of an emotional attachment. But Ron, did you notice how Wally never wore the mask in this issue?
Yes, I did, which is probably smart.
It's funny because when Flash first came out, everybody was complaining that Barry was all grim and gritty, and he was not the happy-go-lucky guy that they were looking for. And when we interviewed Geoff Johns, it was the day this book came out. And then after the interview, we talked to him about it, and we were talking about the reaction to it. And he sort of giggled, and he said it would all make sense. And here's the issue where it makes sense. He's grim and gritty because he's being infected by the anti-Speed Force.
Yeah.
So he's got all this planned out.
Oh, yeah. It's scary.
It unfolds. When the story ends, if you still have problems with it, then that's fine. But there are chapters you've got to get through to the end. And things that don't make sense in the beginning should make sense at the end. If they don't, then that's his fault. He's failed. But things that happen in the beginning are not – you have to let them unfold. And that was just his point to us when we were talking about it. Mm-hmm. He likes that. He likes setting it up so people get annoyed.
Right. It's almost becoming it's becoming almost a vintage Geoff Johns mechanism, I think. Right. I mean, I think it's sort of his hallmark now, and he's done it so well so many times over that I as I said, that's why I have faith. But
It's scary that he knows what he's doing, and that grin that when you talk, if you go to an event or whatever and talk to him, that he gets this grin that he knows what's coming. And he hears you complaining about it, and knows that what you're complaining about, he's going to deal with. Like I was talking to him about the kids, about Wally's kids, and I'm like, please tell me that you're just going to kill them or do something with them. And he just put this grin. He's like, keep reading. He's like, don't worry, keep reading. It's going to work out. And it's just like, and he knows what's coming. Like, and it's so I trust the guy. Of all people writing comics right now, I feel as if he's the one who A, has the love of these characters, and B, has the weird interest in watching us, writhe while we're reading and wanting things to happen, knowing what's going to come from them. Mm-hmm. So no, but it was good. And I mean, but I also like I'm anxious to have this be done because I kind of want to get on with it.
You also don't want to wait 2 months between every issue.
That's true.
Yeah. Right.
The other book that I really, really love was Fantastic Four 570.
Hands down, my pick of the week.
Yeah.
Straight out of the gate. And it's funny because everybody, if you read Twitter and stuff like that, the common theme or comment about this book was, now that's the Fantastic Four. And I got to admit, I share that. Like after, and I've been, I dance in and out of the Fantastic Four. I'm not a diehard reader. I have the omnibuses. I have all the old stuff, and I got the Wade Ringo run. And, I checked in on some of the McDuffie stuff, but never really stuck with it. But reading this, the characterizations felt right. There was enough of a balance between the family and the fantasy aspect, and it's picking up off that great miniseries that Jonathan Hickman wrote. I just loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I mean, same here. It wouldn't actually have been my pick of the week, but I thought it was a really strong issue. I have a long history with Fantastic Four. I've been reading that for 25, 30 years, and I have. Being a back issue collector, I pretty much have almost every issue of FF ever. It's just one of my favorite series of all time, and I've stuck through it in thick and thin. You know, it's one of those books that when it's bad, I still read it. When it's good, I still read it. So this was great. I'm a big John Hickman fan, so I had high hopes for this. But as you said, it really harkens back to the classic runs of FF. And I think when most people think classic, they think of most recently the John Byrne era. And you got a lot of that in this. I mean, you have the opening stanza, which sort of introduces what makes the Fantastic Four different than the other teams. And it really is that they're a family, And I think the thing that struck me about this most of all is that the one thing about Reed, as he's dealt with the Illuminati and Civil War and Secret Invasion, is he's become this very dark, immersive character where he keeps things from Sue. Everything's in his mind. It's very internalized. And while he's brilliant and you would think he'd have all these things going on in his head, I think he's always been at his best when he's been, that talkative genius, the guy that's sharing his ideas. And he's just bursting at the seams with his ideas. And we really got that this time. I mean, he was, walking us through every step of his plan. And it was just, as a longtime FF fan, you saw so many things that were just geeky. I mean, you saw the Room of 100 Ideas, you saw, of course, the big reveal at the end with the Council of Reeds, and
which
of course
was great.
Oh,
it was amazing.
Anytime multiple universes gets me every time. I'm there. It's just like I love seeing different interpretations of the characters,
including the one Reed who looks like Jeff Bridges from Iron Man.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, the three leaders of the council all were wearing Infinity Gauntlets, which yep. is baffling that there's more than one. Yeah. What did you guys think of the art? Because I know you're both longtime JSA fans, and Eaglesham had a great run there, and I love him too. But some people seem to be a little taken aback by his choice of drawing Reed and Johnny really muscular.
Well, that's the Eaglesham, you know, shot in the arm of steroids, mm-hmm. is that everybody's a little more muscular than what they normally are, and which totally was there, but it didn't really get.
Burly Reed.
Yeah, but
call me crazy.
What I actually loved about Eaglesham's art, which I noticed, is that, and it's not an aping in the same style that like Godland or Jersey Gods is doing with Kirby style, but there's a reverence towards the Kirby look with their faces.
Yeah, he's got the big Kirby faces,
which is different than what he did on JSA, and that's the thing that I love about it. And you know, and the fact of the matter is that, you know, Reed has always done, you know, very kind of slim and you know, that's what, but he's, you know, been fighting. He fights people. You know what I mean? Like, of course they'd be a little muscular. You know what I mean? They'd be in shape. They're superheroes.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think that's okay.
Well, definitely. I mean, I think this isn't – some people, I think, act as this is the first time he's been drawn this way. But, you know, the John Buscema run and the
Rich Buckler totally drew him buff.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, this is really nothing new, but it's been a long time since we've seen him this way. But, this would definitely be a 5 out of 5 for me. This was a great book.
I loved that mini that led up to this, and it's funny because I didn't expect it to tie in that strongly.
Oh yeah, it's totally building off of it. Yeah.
Which made me wonder if people hadn't read the mini, would they be confused? I don't know because we all read the mini. But
no, I think they did it in a way that made sense. I mean, all you need to know is that he made this machine and it was too much and he turned it off, but now he's turning it back on. Like, that's all you need to know. But I like just the, like, even in the setup of the issue. I mean, like, it starts off with an action sequence and them fighting these kind of, you know, celestial-esque looking robots, and it brings in the Wizard, which is a great old classic villain. But like, ultimately, this is kind of like a throwaway conflict just to get some action in it. And then, like, honestly, the what did it for me was the at home after the day moments, where after he put the kids to bed with Ben and Johnny picking the vacation with the envelopes.
That was a great scene, yeah.
And then there's one panel where Reed comes up behind Sue and hugs her, and like, you just see the love between them, and you see like, and it's like,
very true.
Yeah, and you get that family sense. And then, you know, she's going to bed and he's got his cup of coffee and he's like, I'm gonna stay up a little bit, and you know what's coming. You know, like, you know, like, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, and he's got a little bit of a beard going on. He's got a little, he's like borderline crazy, you know, like, I've been working all night, leave me alone, Reed Richards, you know. So,
and he's got that beard you had when we were launching the new website.
Yes, yeah.
Nice. I was kissing my wife about a half hour before this taping, and I was thinking, oh, I'm just like Reed.
Yeah.
Kissing my wife to bed so I can go and do something, only I'm talking about comics instead of creating extra-dimensional gateways.
Yeah. And then just seeing all the multiple Reeds in the Council of Reeds, and then the killer last page with the 3 Infinity Gauntlet guys are just that. I mean, I'm so psyched for this run.
Hickman is the perfect writer for Fantastic Four. Perfect.
Oh, absolutely true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's great. But you know what? My favorite thing about this book and all Marvel books was, I want to live and work in man country.
Those ads are awesome. I love the throwback ads.
You think I can clip out that thing and send it in? You think it'll still take me in man country?
You can try.
I don't know. I think not.
They'll train me in the spare time. Exciting outdoor work.
So Dark Avengers number 8 is coming towards the end of the X-Men Dark Avengers kind of crossover with the Utopia storyline. Connor, are you reading this or?
No, I dropped this when they went off, when Bendis left, and when they went off to this crossover, I dropped it.
Yeah, that was probably a good idea.
Like, it was hot.
But essentially, I've been struggling with this Utopia crossover. I've been, you know, like, I've, you know, been very clear in that I feel like it's kind of forced and contrived and put on, and I didn't believe the Emma Frost swerve and all that stuff, and I was right. You know, it turns out Emma was working undercover the whole time, and this is the issue where it all happened. But what kind of sucked is that at the end of this issue, I was like, wow, that was pretty good. So now I'm back on. It's like an abusive relationship right now.
You are totally here.
Yeah.
It's okay, Ron. We have a shelter for you.
had a bunch of action, and we're coming close to a resolution, and I'm kind of excited about where it's going to end up.
You know, I was listening to your guys' show every week. I empathize with you as a longtime X fan through thick and thin. I always know, you know, people are kind of waiting for you to bring up the X books, but like you, I've thought of Utopia so far before this issue was kind of. Yeah, you know, it was okay. I mean, you know, I love the Avengers, I love the X-Men, but it seemed like it was just a pretty thin excuse, you know, riots and protests to get these guys in the same book. But I thought this issue was actually very strong, and it's funny because it's actually a Dark Avengers issue, but I think the revelations in it are much more pertinent to Uncanny.
Oh, yeah. If you're an X-Men fan and you're not reading this, they're assuming all X-Men fans are buying Dark Avengers to read the storyline. If you didn't buy this issue, you missed a huge plot development.
Yeah, and it was great to see that Emma didn't turn heel again because, you know, I'm sure back when she first joined the X-Men, I was against it and thought, oh no, she's a villain. But she's really, you know, become one of my favorite characters, and she's a very complex character, and I'm thrilled that she really was on the side of she stayed on Scott's side from the start, and it was all a big bait and switch. I'm psyched that Cloak and Dagger look like they're finally going to be full time, at least for now, members of the X-Men. And look, I mean, anytime you bring Asteroid M back into the picture, it's good times.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, ultimately, it ends with a great, you know, like, you know, they pull the Emma and Namor kind of turn on Osborn, and they fight back, and they take Cloak and Dagger with them, and they meet up with Scott and the rest of the X-Men because they've been, you know, setting up something behind the scenes. And that's been the whole thing that's frustrated me, is that I didn't know what was going on. I knew something was going on, but I didn't know what it was. And turns out they're raising Magneto's old Asteroid M from the ground, and it sounds like they're gonna leave Earth, you know, which is a fascinating, a little disappointing turn, because I would have liked some more years in San Francisco as a little hometown pride. But the last two pages of, you know, all the X-Men gathered on the deck of it, and there's an X flag behind them, and Scott addresses everybody, you know, on television telepathically, it was kind of like rousing. It was like, yeah, X-Men are, you know, they're standing up for themselves. And I, as an X-Fan, I really liked it. And there's one panel, Luke Ross did the art on this issue, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he can draw Cyclops whenever he wants, as far as I'm concerned, because there's that one panel when it's the second to last page, and Emma's got her hand on Scott's head, and Namor's to the left of him, and the flag's behind him, and Nightcrawler's bamfing in, and that was just a great panel. And I was like, that's,
sure,
you know, because Cyclops really, I don't like the skull cap Cyclops, so I don't like the recent costume, but he made it work. In this issue.
It's funny when you bring up Luke Ross, because he's really hit or miss with me. He was pretty good in Jonah Hex when he was doing it. I liked him there. I thought he was a good fit. And then, you know, he's been the semi-regular artist on Cap of late. And while he's certainly not by any stretch a bad artist, I don't think he has the dynamism that, you know, that we saw from, you know, from Epting and Perkins.
He was a pale comparison. When he came on the Cap, I was like, oh.
Yeah. So I was a little cringy when I saw his name on this issue. But no, I thought he did pretty well. I thought it was well-paced, and he really told the story well. And the close-up scenes and some of the interactions were actually, there was a lot more expression in his faces, which I think is usually where he falls a little short. So it's good stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, it looks like it's getting to be a good place. So I might have to eat some crow on this story arc. That's okay.
Stand up for yourself, Ron.
Yeah, I'm serious. It's no, baby, I love you. No, it's, that's what it is. It's just it's an abusive relationship.
Well, are you used to this?
Yeah, exactly. So to continue the Batman love, it's hard not to love every page of Detective Comics A56. Again, J.H. Williams, the pages with Batwoman out of costume at the dance and the tuxedo and everything, complete style change. Total. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to see a comic all in this style. You know, like, it's just amazing to see how he can switch gears so quickly and do it so well.
Did you guys get a Mike Allred vibe from some of those?
It is very Allred. It's amazing. He doesn't have a style, but he does.
Right.
It's just made up of lots of different kinds of styles, which is
right. Yeah.
Unusual, especially in comics. I really liked the whole ball scene. That was my favorite part of the book. The beginning was a little wonky. I didn't really enjoy it as much because it was trying to figure out what was going on, and I don't really love the monsters aspect of it, but... Mm-hmm. I did love everything else, and I thought it was funny. I thought I caught a little bit of editorial interference in this when they're going to the ball, and there's a bunch of dialogue about what's happening outside of the ball, and then there's a bunch of balloons. Grayson, Mr. Grayson, they're talking about the swimsuit model he's with and how he's always bringing a model to the parties. I bet you it was Wayne, Mr. Wayne, before, because that's not something that was happening.
Oh, right,
now.
Right, sure.
But, yeah. I was wondering about that. I was wondering if Dick was going to be a playboy in that way. I don't know enough if he's going to be. It sounds like he will be then, I guess.
Well, I think they just had to change it because it wouldn't make sense for it to be Wayne.
Oh,
Mr.
I see what you're saying.
They had no other choice but to make it Grayson, Mr. Grayson. And
yeah, good point.
J.H. Williams has had these pages drawn for a long time, right? Is that that's probably what had to do with it?
I think we're catching up quickly on what he's had drawn, but he's been working on this for the past 2 years. I think he was probably operating off a script that already existed. Yeah.
I mean, with this one, look, Greg Rucka's a fantastic writer, but to me, this book is 96% about the art. The art is just a tour de force. If you read comics and you know, you're one of those people that just care about the story and the plot, you know, this book's okay. But if you're someone that is an art guy, which I certainly am, this is just visually stunning from start to finish, and it's an absolute triumph. And so, the story's good in and of itself, which makes it a real treat. But even if it wasn't, this book would be worth buying just to look at the pretty pictures. It's baffling.
We interviewed Rucka at San Diego, and he said that he thought that, what did he say exactly? He said that J.H. Williams was writing a new chapter in the language of comics or something along those lines. I'm paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. But he's drawing a line in the sand as to right now, 2009 comics, like his run on this on Detective Comics is going to be held up as like the, you know, changing the game when it comes to the art between the layouts and the style changes and everything like that. They're just, it's just amazing. Love it.
Well, hopefully people can keep up with it. That's the only question. And
yeah.
And the backup was, I really enjoy the backup. I think the backup's a really strong story. And it was interesting is that people, I wonder if people are going to freak out because eventually they're going to swap.
Yep.
And mm-hmm. the question is going to be the lead story, with then Batwoman's going to go in the back. Yeah. So I wonder what people's reactions are going to be, because people love it when things change.
Yeah.
It's going to
yeah.
be interesting. I like them both. I think it's one of the stronger co-feature books out there whereas both stories are really, really compelling.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably second to the Doom Patrol Metal Men co-feature. Well,
we've only had one issue of that.
Yeah, so but that was really, really strong, though. So.
Sure, sure. Yeah. It's hard. There's been three of these, and they've all yeah. been good.
Understood.
Eventually, when all of those come out and you want to read them all together, you go to InStockTrades.com. They have the 37% off. There are trades with free shipping on orders over $50. Over 5,400 trade paperbacks are in stock and available for order right now, with new releases listed every Wednesday, and orders that usually ship within 48 hours of your purchase. And that's all available at www.instocktrades.com. Now, Gotham City Sirens.
This is a great cover.
It was solicited, great cover, solicited by Paul Dini. If you go to dccomics.com, Paul Dini is the writer listed there. Only the third issue in. Paul Dini was the creative mind behind this book. You go to the store and you pick it up, and there's Scott Lobdell.
What? Really?
Yes.
You got Lobdelled.
I got Lobdelled.
Was it any good?
It was a very sort of middle-of-the-road Batman story. It didn't even feature the characters from the book. It was just all about the Riddler.
Right.
And
did
Batman.
Dini, did Dini write the story, at least? Or is no, it was all Lobdell? Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
See, now, I have nothing against him, because I didn't read those X-Men books when he came on. I was out of the X-Men by that point, so I have no history. All I know is of people who did and don't really like the work. He's a very interesting conversationalist.
Yes, he is.
That's my only history with him. But it was just a very, very, very middle of the road, like, okay, that was a sort of very standard. It was nothing bad about it, nothing good about it, but it was just kind of like, you don't buy the book expecting one guy and you get the other guy.
Oh, and that's even a rough, that's a rough bait and switch.
I know, that's
Paul Dini to Scott Lobdell is two very different
right,
things.
Right.
Yeah.
Disappointed when I got that.
So, the sleeper book of the week for those playing at home was Dark X-Men: The Beginning, issue number 3. This is the last of the little 3-issue miniseries with little kind of anthology stories about the Dark X-Men. And the reason why it was the sleeper book was because you got 3 stories in it, and not only would the first one was an amazingly well written, beautifully drawn Emma Namor story by Paul Cornell and Leonard Kirk, the team behind Captain Britain, who we love, which is just a great journey into Namor's mind, which I thought was really, really good. In the middle, if you weren't paying attention, oh, look at that. Jason Aaron and Jock's first work at Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And if this is any indication of what's to come by Jock working at Marvel, I want more now.
What was great about this comic was that I got this because of the names involved. I haven't read the first 2. I don't know what the hell is going on with the Dark X-Men. I know nothing, but I had no problem, A, following everything, and B, enjoying it.
Yep.
Just the first 2. Yeah. I didn't read the last
1. Yeah, the last one's a throwaway. Don't even read it.
Like, the first story was all, it seemed to me to be all immersed into whatever's happening in the Dark X-Men books, but I followed it perfectly fine. I got what was going on. I thought Paul Cornell did a fantastic job of giving you the information you needed and telling an interesting and funny short story. And then the Jock story with Jason Aaron was a sort of sequel to the Mystique arc he did with Ron Garney, and it was great. It was a really good issue. I was really happy that I went out, and we have to thank Jimsky, our writer, for alerting us, because I didn't even notice the creative team, but he sent an email out saying, hey, don't miss this book, and I got it because of him, and it was good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this, too. I do think that it probably was supposed to come out a few weeks ago, just because the whole premise for those that weren't reading this was 3 one-shots that basically introduce how Norman Osborn recruits each of the quote-unquote Dark X-Men to join the team. You know, and with each one, sometimes he has to use coercion, sometimes he has to you know, play nice with them, and it's been little vignette stories about it with some pretty strong creative teams. In this one, though, I do think you guys were right to single this one out, because I thought it was really well done. Look, anytime Jason Aaron really gets these characters, you know, his Get Mystique arc was fantastic, and I hope we see him do more of this. Obviously, he's writing the Wolverine Weapon X book as well now. But I say that it should have come out earlier, because this is we sort of get our glimpse here into Mystique joining the Dark X-Men, but we didn't really know she was part of the Dark X-Men until the last issue or two of Utopia, when it becomes clear that she's actually acting as Professor Xavier in public. She's pretending to be Xavier to further Norman's agenda. So, but aside from that nitpick, I thought this was really entertaining. And as you guys said, anytime you get to see Cornell and Kirk together, now that Captain Britain is gone, it was good. So yeah, I really enjoyed this as well.
There's this 2-page spread I'm looking at right now where it's before the annoying Ultimate Alliance 2 ads, which I'm sick of, by the way. where it's like almost a full body shot of Mystique and Norman's, you know, grabbing a drink, and then the second page is the memory of Mystique, you know, facing off against the cops, and she's shooting the guns in the air and riding the motorcycle, and it's just like, man, Jock is so good.
Well, and the thing is, too, I don't know about you guys, but I thought this looked a little... I actually just read all 5 trades of The Losers in the last month or two.
Wow.
So I have Jock mania right now. Yeah. This is definitely a bit of a departure from that. It's still clearly him, but it looks like, I mean, at least to my untrained artistic eye, that this is a little rougher. Like, it's his pencils that they're...
It's a heavier line he's using. It's definitely a little modified.
Yeah. Yeah. A little less graphic than The Losers or even Green Arrow Year One, but it was beautiful. I'm with you. If we see Jock put this out, even, you know, he's not the fastest artist, if we can get, you know, 8 issues out of him a year in this style, that would be terrific.
It'd be great. All right, well, let's speed through the rest of them here. Green Lantern 45, it was all right. Monkey's art was okay, but I was like, I would like to see Hal Jordan.
Well, he's off doing Blackest Night stuff, so we're getting the side stories. But what made me really think in this book was that Carol Ferris, like, there's that whole fraternity of Silver Age heroes of Hal and Barry and Ralph and Ray. They all sort of, you know, hung out together, but they all had the girlfriends or wives.
Yep.
And Carol was different in that she's also like a superhero or superpowered being in her own right.
Yeah.
And it just made me remember that, because it's been a while since I've really dealt with the Star Sapphire thing. And she's not just one of the girlfriends, which sounds so demeaning, but that's just what they were. She's also a badass hero or villain sometimes, but that's what really stood out for this in my mind. People were surprised. I saw an iFanboy that she had hauled off and socked Sinestro, but she's been a superpowered being for decades.
Yeah.
And you just forget that. That's something that I've forgotten, and it was nice to remember.
In this issue, also another amazing 2-page Monkey spread with Agent Orange surrounded by Black Lanterns, including a Black Lantern Guardian, which I thought was pretty cool. These 2-page spreads that Monkey's doing in this book are just amazing. Good stuff. All right, Sherlock Holmes number 4 from Dynamite.
This is the 4th issue. This is the series that are being written by Alan Moore's daughter and her boyfriend, partner, whatever he is.
This is also the only non-Marvel...
Fiance now.
Fiance. This is only the only non-Marvel or DC book we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've been enjoying this. I think this is good.
It's a locked room mystery, you know. Sherlock Holmes in a room that's locked with a guy, and there's a gunshot, and the guy's dead, and Holmes is holding the smoking gun, and what the hell happens? And we're getting to the point of figuring out what the hell happened, and I've really been enjoying it. It's been a classic Sherlock Holmes story, I think.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it's a friend of mine is reading this on my recommendation, and he complained that it's really slow. And I said to him, well, to be fair, I think it's actually classic Sherlock Holmes. You know, Sherlock Holmes is not typically an action-packed... I mean, if you've read, you know, Conan Doyle or any of the follow-on stuff. I mean, well-written Sherlock Holmes is all about the mental intrigue of him sort of slowly but surely piecing things together, and then you get the big reveal at the end. And obviously that we're leading to that. But I think the art's really, really well done. It's hyper-detailed and really harkens back to that period. You could tell that Campbell put a lot of time in understanding the period and the attire and the, you know, the buildings and the architecture. And I mean, as you said, it's so far so good. It's you know, what would happen if Sherlock Holmes was framed for a murder that he couldn't prove he didn't do? And that's basically what this story is. It just feels like another in a long line of very intriguing Holmes capers.
It's nice. I really like this. Next issue is going to be some sort of Perry Mason-esque courtroom scene, which will get us to the end of the story.
Cool. So I want to talk about Nova number 28 and Guardians of the Galaxy number 17. War Kings is wrapping up, and I love these books. I want to take them home.
They always come out the same week.
They have been recently, I think. I don't quote me on that, but I think so. There were a couple of great moments in each of these issues. In Nova, when Nova faces off with Ballistar to kind of negotiate their leaving the planet, I thought it was kind of the moment of maturity for Rich Rider and accepting his role as the leader of the Nova Corps and like knowing how to sum up a situation and basically win. I thought that was really, really good. Some great scripting on Abnett and Lanning's part. There was, and in Guardians of the Galaxy, there were several moments that made me laugh out loud.
I am Groot.
Yeah, exactly. That whole, so basically, I am Groot and Maximus start plotting how to solve the rift in space, and all while Groot is saying, "I am Groot," and Maximus is going, "Subsonic transmissions, you're right, amazing!" And like, he's just saying, "I am Groot," but turns out there's a whole bunch of subtle language underneath "I am Groot" that only Maximus can hear or whatever, and it was just a genius kind of thing. The only thing that kind of can criticize me, and I feel like Josh in this criticism, is that in both issues, there was a pop culture reference. At one point, Nova and Quasar are flying and talking, and Nova's trying to talk Quasar into staying with them, and training new Nova Corps members. And Wendell says, "Thanks, but I'll pass, Dumbledore." And I was like, "Really? Would Quasar be making a Harry Potter reference?" And then at one point in Guardians of the Galaxy, somebody refers to Adam Warlock as Gerard Way. I think it was Rocket Raccoon. Right. Something happened to, they talked to Gerard Way over there. And I was like, really? Would they be making a My Chemical Romance reference? But other than that, these are just great. I love these books. And if you're not reading them, you're missing out on good fun.
You guys have been giving Abnett and Lanning their just desserts seemingly every week that they come out with something. And I cheer every time you do, because I'm so glad that you guys are all on board with this now and that Josh has come along to the Cosmic. Because, for going on it's about probably 4 years now, these guys have been just knocking out the park. And it's... it started with the first Annihilation, and it's just gone from there. But the Groot thing just had me rolling. I mean, it's probably the funniest thing of the week because, as anyone that's read the series from the start, Groot is this giant tree who started off as a sapling at the beginning of the book. But he's this giant tree, and all he ever does is say, "I am Groot." So you just think he's this big bruiser, and it turns out he's the king of this race of pan-dimensional tree creatures. And we're just not smart enough to understand him, and he's actually a super genius. So it's just stuff like that it's so layered and nuanced. It's just unbelievably funny, and to have this insane Maximus be the one that understands him, it had me laughing out loud. And it wraps up War of Kings, but then it leads us into a classic cosmic conundrum, which is the return of Magus, which long time Marvel cosmic know that when Magus is around, things are not good. He's a pretty much unstoppable, he's Adam Warlock's evil version, and he's pretty much omnipotent, and he's back.
Great, great setup in both books to take us out of War of Kings. Now Guardians of the Galaxy got to deal with Magus. Nova's got to deal with the rebuilding of the Nova Corps. It's just there, and I just feel as if every month I need to celebrate the fact that now we've got 28 issues of Nova of an ongoing. Like, this is the book that they said can't sustain an ongoing, and it is.
Right, it's true.
Cool. So those are the books that we enjoyed this week. Go to ifanboy.com/comics. You can see all the books that came out. You can do your picks and pulls and do your ratings and write reviews. And we want to highlight a couple more books from you, the user community at iFanboy. And our first book is New Avengers, number 56. And Akamu reviewed it. And he gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 1 out of 5. Ouch. And the iFan base made this 1.2% made it their pick of the week at time of recording. And Akamu says, "I had to check the minutiae to make sure this book wasn't written by Chris Bendis or Brian's cousin Phil Bendis, who makes lovely raspberry tarts but terrible comics. No, this is Brian Michael Bendis. And it's not that just he's phoning it in, it's that he's got a spotty cell phone reception and is being easily distracted by some better, more interesting story he's working on, probably the new Ultimate Spidey. His usually stellar dialogue seems like he took random movie cliches and some old action scenes from his previous comics and cut and pasted them without looking." Some harsh words from Akamu on New Avengers.
Ouch. Yeah, I don't know if you guys are reading this, but...
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, it follows what I thought was a pretty strong arc of New Avengers, where we're introduced to the new Sorcerer Supreme, Brother Voodoo, which is kick-ass. It's Stuart Immonen art, so I didn't think it was strongest Stuart Immonen I've ever seen, but I don't know that I'd ever call Stuart Immonen art a 1 out of 5. I think that's kind of harsh.
Yeah, I think he's... Because he's changing his style, and I think he's working through what that means. But but I thought the whole opening scene with Mockingbird was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and as the guy sitting in Josh's seat, I felt like I had to bring up that Bobby Bobby represents in this book as the hardcore one, because they're all depowered in the beginning of the book, and she obviously doesn't have power, so she tries to go up against the Wrecking Crew, and obviously she doesn't stand a chance, but she gives it her all with Cap's shield, and it was good stuff.
And he addressed the fact where she's wondering why Clint was incapacitated as well, because he doesn't have any powers, but does he have powers?
Right, that's what I was thinking.
Oh, he better not.
Maybe they're giving him powers.
Oh, that's stupid. My thing is, I liked it. I enjoyed it. It was a solid issue. I love Immonen, but I'm just ready for them to be off on their own telling stories again. I'm kind of over the whole Norman Osborn thing. That's just my general Marvel feeling. But, I think back on the old New Avengers stuff that was great in the beginning, because they were just telling their own stuff, and it was fun and exciting. Yeah, and we're still fighting Norman Osborn here a year later.
They're getting ready to wrap it up.
I know they are. They have to be, but
yeah, because they have the list one shots.
Yeah, the list is going to be the beginning of the downfall, I think.
Right.
All right.
Well, next up we have Changing Shades, who reviewed X-Force number 18 and gave the story a 4 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5, and 0.67% of the iFan base made it their pick of the week. And Changing Shade says, you know, there's only so many times you can play the oh no, everyone is dead card at the end of the issue before I will get burnt out on it. Not that this issue was bad, far from it, but I'm definitely getting fatigued with every issue being so-and-so is now dead or irreparably damaged or whatever. I have no concern that the last few pages of this issue will be handled and dealt with by the end of the next issue. I like the character that they may be resurrecting this issue, as I always felt his death was the start of the end of a quality New Mutant stories. The art is infinitely better than it has been. It's still a little too cartoony for me, but much more palatable. He really doesn't give any details in this, does he? It's kind of all...
It's all about the page, the reveal at the end to X-23 in this issue for me. There was a, oh, damn moment.
Yeah. Is she dead?
No, she's held prisoner. You see at the bottom of one page, you see her arm. And then you turn the page and you see her hanging by a chain by one arm, and somebody cut her arm off.
Well, Kimura cut her arm off.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Kimura's her longtime handler. I don't know if you guys read the X-23 miniseries that, you know, that Kyle and Yost did. That's one of the first things they did with him, and I thought really made her – you know, at first I hated her as a character. So I was like, great, that's what we need is a female Wolverine. But I thought the Kyle Yost mini really turned me around on her, and I actually like her as a character. But Kimura, I think we last saw that her in the new X-Men series before with the Young X-Men series when you know Kimura was trying to track down X-23 and she had a run in, and I think if I recall, because I didn't look this up before the show, I think Emma, like last we saw, she took Kimura and brainwashed her and basically wiped her mind clean and told her to go after her old partners at the lab that created X-23 and kill them all. So obviously between then and now she's gotten better and is back working on the you know, the side of the bad. So right. I don't know what happened there, but
It was an oh damn moment, and there was also a great scene with Wolverine and Cyclops, a big kind of argument fight. And normally I don't like Mike Choi's art, but I thought this was really strong.
Same here. X-Force is a real guilty pleasure for me because there's so many characters in it, and both heroes and villains that I just adore. But I'm just not crazy about either Crane or Choi's art typically.
Yeah. Yeah, it was good, though. I enjoyed it. Normally, I mean, I'm not a fan of Crane either, so I was glad to see something different, and I found myself enjoying this issue.
Yep.
Cool. So if you want to write a review, go to ifanboy.com/comics, and maybe we'll feature your review on a future show. And before we get to the emails, I just want to remind everybody about Netflix. Make sure you head over to www.netflix.com/ifanboy, where you can sign up for an account for as little as $4.99 and get a free 2-week trial. They're this great service where I'm sure you've heard of them. I don't need to explain it. You can rent DVDs online, pick your movies. They send them to you. No shipping fees. No late fees. They got fast delivery. I just got two more DVDs in the mail today. I mailed them in 2 days ago. It's just fast turnarounds. They got Blu-ray titles. If you got the Blu-ray players, you can also do the streaming on your personal laptop or on your Xbox 360, and you can love it.
Or your Roku box. That's what I do.
A Roku box, yes, indeed. So go to www.netflix.com/ifanboy to sign up today.
Watch your weeds like crazy.
I got Stop Making Sense, the Talking Heads live concert.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Email time. Eric from Oshkosh, Wisconsin says, as I often do, I was looking over the EC horror and sci-fi comics recently. Hands down, the EC comics are my favorite things to read. I think the stories are fun. The art from Johnny Craig, Phil Fledstein, Wally Wood, and Kurtzman are, for me, way better than anything I've seen from the great American comic artists like Kirby and Ditko. However, reading these classics get me thinking. Frederick Wortham has been demonized as the man who ruined comics for Seduction of the Innocent and the campaign against comics. Given the lack of popularity that non-superhero comics seem to have today, would most current comic readers still consider Wortham to be such a negative force in the industry on this fair medium? Or is it just people like me who wish for more variety in their comics and to have gotten more of the EC books and are bitter about the whole thing? I was curious what you guys thought.
I don't really understand what he's asking here.
He's asking if people now would consider Wortham as a villain.
So if Wortham was out now and complaining?
No, or do people now look back on him as a villain still because everybody seems to only want superhero comics?
Oh, yeah, he's an asshole.
I think a lot of people don't even know who Wortham is, though.
I mean, Wortham stole a generation of comics from us, basically. Right.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I understand why he's asking the question, sort of like a what if, but at the end of the day, I think you have to, whenever you're talking about something historical, you have to try and think of the context at the moment. And in the moment, he was harmful to the comics industry. Yeah. Whether or not it evolved in a way that the harm was mitigated is irrelevant to me. I mean, he intended to, or at least he was driven to do something that I think, whether you think it did have permanent damage, it certainly damaged the industry for a generation. So, yeah,
So people don't know, Frederick Wortham was a psychologist who studied, adolescent misbehavior or juvenile delinquents and stuff like that. And he found that these kids in the 40s and 50s who were in trouble, they all had a common thread that they all read comics. And that wasn't the only thing that he mentioned, but comics for some reason seemed to be the thing that got pulled out. And so based off that, Congress got involved and there was, you know, all this, you know, kind of uproar in the 50s. And it basically led to the Comics Code Authority, which is the one, which was the governing body over comics that deemed what could be in comics and what couldn't be, which, and, you know, Marvel and DC didn't jettison the Comics Code until the 2000s. So you had, you know, almost 50 years of this kind of, you know, governing.
But not only that, he specifically targeted EC and their horror and stuff. So that company went under.
Drove them out of business, yeah, because under the Comic Code Authority, the Tales from the Crypt and Creepy and all these other books couldn't exist.
Yeah, if you guys know from if you listen to our show, I mean, we EC holds a very special place in our heart, particularly my co-host Vince. I mean, that's, you know, those are some of the, in my opinion, greatest comics and some of the greatest art we've ever seen in the medium.
I mean, that's the thing. I mean, like, people who know comics know the name Kurtzman and Wally Wood, you know, and Feldstein and all that kind of stuff. But, like, I don't think, you know, much of the common public don't know those names as well as, you know, Jack Kirby or Stan Lee because of Wortham, you know, which is kind of unfortunate.
And this point that Eric makes is that the market, the way it is now, that people, the majority of the people who read comics, read superhero comics, don't care about anything else. Would they even consider them a bad thing?
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, I mean, again, I know for the sake of this show, it's probably too tangential, but I mean, again, all he did was something. He's not the first or the last to do that, which is, you know, he took a as someone who deals with statistical analysis pretty much every day in my, you know, my day job, quote unquote, you know, he just cited a really obtuse, you know, statistical correlation. Lots of things in the world are correlated, you know, like we share, you know, over 90% of the same DNA with chickens, you know, so you could say that. I mean, but so it's just, it's one of those statistical things. Like, he used the idea that kids that were getting in trouble read comics. Well, at the time, there weren't many adolescent men boys in the country that didn't read comics. They were one of the most. It would be like people blaming crystal meth addiction in this country now on Google.
Or no, or on Grand Theft Auto.
Or rock and roll.
Well, yeah, that's true. Or even like YouTube, something that's so ubiquitous that I mean, comics were as ubiquitous today as YouTube is now. I mean, just, you know, everybody read some kind of comic book. So it was a really misplaced, you know, he put the focus on a completely misplaced area. So
yeah, crazy. I find the whole thing fascinating. If you don't know about Frederick Wortham, Seduction of the Innocent, go read it on Wikipedia or go look it up, because it is a fascinating story. But yeah, no, it's really not good. All right, so if you have any questions about comics or comics history, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. And we're going to skip the voicemails this week because we spent a long time talking about a lot of books because it was a fat week, which is good. So, but call in and leave us a voicemail if you want at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
And we have a couple things to highlight. First is we're doing the Thirst poster giveaway, which we've been doing for a month now, and this is the last week for it. In fact, depending on when you're listening to it, this show, it could be over. You got until the last day of August to become an iFanboy member to be eligible to win the grand prize, which is a signed movie poster of Thirst by the director Park Chan-wook. And you also get the official movie soundtrack, and that's going to be one grand prize winner. And there's going to be three runner-up winners who are going to win the soundtrack CD. So you've got until the last day of August to become a member to become eligible. All members are eligible. You don't have to do anything special. Just be a member. And we're going to announce that not on the next show because it's a live show and it's going to be crazy, but on the episode 201, we're going to announce the winners for that.
So, Jason, you are a podcaster on 11 O'Clock Comics. Where can people find your show?
Well, first let me say, for those that aren't familiar with my show, we are the antithesis of Josh, Ron, and Connor, who are clearly professionals and very organized and put a lot of thought and time into their show. So, but in all seriousness, I mean, we're a very off-the-cuff show. It's four of us. It's myself, Jason Wood, it's Vince B, and David Price, who some may know from they used to have a Marvel podcast called Bullpen Bulletins, and then Chris Niesman, who you guys know well, is the is one of the founders and co-hosts of Around Comics, who you guys were giving some Twitter shit to tonight because they are actually recording their 250th episode tonight.
Yes, and a tip of the hat to them for 250.
Yeah, absolutely. So the four of us basically get together every Wednesday night at 11 o'clock, hence the name. We have some drinks and we talk about whatever we feel like. There's no script. We shoot the shit for about 2 hours until Vince cuts us off and edits it together. And it's us talking comics and quite a few crazy voicemails, some weird intro and outro music. And it's shockingly been well received. I would have been happy if four people listened to us, but it seems like we've built quite a nice audience. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, I do listen. I listen to it while I run on the weekends, and it's a bit long for my taste, but I hang in there.
It's freewheeling. Thanks.
Yeah, exactly.
It is very freely. And I guess I should say where we could find us. See, I'm so unprofessional, I don't even give our you can, of course, iTunes is the place to go to subscribe. It's 11 O'Clock Comics, but you can find us on our website is is Bullpen Bulletins Podcast. That's lengthy.com or 11o'clockcomics.com. Either URL will get you there. So.
And we'll throw a link up on the show notes for the show. So if you go to ifanboy.com, go to the show notes, you can find a link there.
Much love.
Cool. Yeah. And thank you for joining us, Jason, stepping in for Josh. We appreciate it.
Huge shoes to fill, but
sea urchins.
He's fishing for sea urchins. They're not that big shoes to fill, Wood.
He's a small man.
He's
a slight man. That's true. conceptually, big shoes to fill.
I'm gonna hear about that later.
So if you can't get enough podcasts in addition to this podcast and 11 o'clock comics, you can, and if you like kind of pop culture things, check out our sister podcast, Murmur, where last episode, both me and Josh and Connor, which is actually our first show all together on a Murmur podcast. We talked about Mad Men and District 9, which I missed out on, and I saw the movie after the recording, and it was awesome. And we also did a kind of a preview of all the upcoming fall movies, so you definitely want to go to murmur.com, check that out. And episode number 7 is going to be out this week, and we're going to have some cool technology talk on that one, so you're going to want to check that out. So look forward on murmur.com around this Tuesday.
Or you can search on iTunes for that, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And this is episode 199, which means next week is episode 200, and we're doing the episode 200 live show. That's Friday, September 14th at Jim Hanley's Universe, which is 33rd Street, just off of 5th Avenue, right across the street from the Empire State Building. We'll be there. The show starts at 7. You'll probably want to get there a little early. There'll be some seats, but if anything like the 100th episode, there was way more people than seats. So if you want to make sure you can sit for the hour, make sure you get there early enough. And after the show, we're going to go for drinks at Legends, which is the bar right next door to Jim Hanley's, and we'll be there all night. And if you come to the show, there's going to be a ton of giveaways.
Yep.
So if you like free stuff, that's cool. Come to the show because we have a stack of stuff to give away. It's going to be fun.
So let me get straight. If you live in the New York City area, like comics, you like iFanboy, you like getting stuff for free, and you like to drink, you should come out with us. That's the story. So
that's the story. So come to Jim Hanley's Universe. You got no excuse. None whatsoever.
By the way, it's September 4th. You said 14th.
September 4th, yes.
4th.
Yeah, yes,
4th.
Thank you.
I don't want people stiffen you and showing up on the 14th and Hanley's being like, where the fuck
that's funny.
That would be great. Are you going to make it out, Jason?
I'm going to certainly try.
Awesome. We'd love to have you.
Do you like free things?
I like drinks.
Yes, you do.
Oh, that's fine, too. I also have those as well.
Nice. Cool. So, and those giveaways are open to anyone who attends the show. But if you do like giveaways and on an ongoing basis you want to be eligible to win things, you should become an iFanboy member. Go to ifanboy.com/store. That's where you can sign up. We got a couple of different tiers where you can sign up as. You can sign up for $4 a month, which is the price of one shitty comic book. Or you can pay $42 a year at that rate. And we will send you pins and stickers. And we'll replace that comic book with a free comic book from our personal collections. And if you got a little more money to spend, for $10 a month or $100 a year, you get all that cool stuff plus an iFanboy members t-shirt, which you can wear to cons and show your love for the iFanboy nation. And in addition, all members are eligible for giveaways. We gave away some signed Blackest Night number ones. We gave away a page of Mike Allred art. And we're telling you now, September is going to be the month for giveaways. We have got boxes of stuff to give away to you that we've been accumulating over the summer. A lot of great trade paperbacks, a lot of good hardcovers. Definitely, you're going to want to be a member. So go to ifanboy.com/store, sign up today. And we thank you to everyone who signed up so far.
You can check out ifanboy.com, and that's where you can read my pick of the week review of Batman and Robin number 3. You can read all the great writers we've got there, daily content, all kinds of fun stuff. Comics page where you can make your pull list, all the great things that are happening. There's a discussion about every book that comes out every week. So go to ifanboy.com. That's where you can find all of our social networking links, all of the information about us, how to become our friends online. That's at ifanboy.com/about. Basically, ifanboy.com is the place to go.
Yes.
For all the people that like cool stuff and like to drink.
And if you want to follow us on Twitter, go to twitter.com/ifanboy, where you can see us ridicule around comics on a weekly basis.
It's almost too easy. It's almost too easy. I feel kind of bad because it's like picking on the slow.
Hey, now, we're like the bastard stepchild of around comics, so I don't know what that says about us.
So, excellent. When you're also at iFanboy, go to ifanboy.com/store, where you can sign up for the membership, as well as you can still get your hands on a Power and Responsibility t-shirt for $15. Nothing to do with Spider-Man. And for those of you who missed out on our Herm shirt, you can pre-order your Herm shirt. We're going to do another print run of it. It's going to be a smaller print run. It's going to be limited, so make sure you get your orders in quickly. Go do it now.
Yeah, we're pre-ordering for about a month, and then we're going to order the shirts. So get in there. Don't miss it again. While you're there, ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can go to the iFanboy Amazon store, which basically just the link takes you to Amazon itself, and it helps us out. You don't spend an extra dime or dollar or anything. And just if you're going to shop at Amazon normally, help us out by going to ifanboy.com/Amazon. We really appreciate that.
And if you're not aware of the fact that we do a video show as well, and this past Wednesday we had our interview with Darwin Cook from San Diego, which was I did the interview. It was a great time. Darwin's an awesome creator. He very early on in the interview he makes me look like a fool. So,
memory of that interview hurt me.
Yeah, exactly.
Just watching it again.
Listen, at 9 a.m.
Even 9. It was 8:48.
8:48. Hungover. Done a couple of shots already that morning. It was a tough situation, but Darwin is awesome. And if you're interested in the future of comics and digital comics, you're going to want to watch that interview to see what one of the industry greats have to say about it. So you can go find that at revision3.com/iFanboy or on TiVo or on YouTube or wherever you watch video, as well as iFanboy.com.
You don't want to miss the cameo by Jimmy Palmiotti.
Exactly.
You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can call us 888-FANBOYS to 326-2697. Any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, marriage proposals, debt collection?
No.
Oh,
somebody
that,
called my house looking for James Kilpatrick because they owed money to some collection agency. You know, I've never even met anyone named James Kilpatrick. It's not me.
And finally, if you dig us, go to iTunes, write a review. If you like 11 O'Clock Comics, write a review about them, write a review about Around Comics, or any podcast you listen to, let people know. Or better yet, get the word out about iFanboy. Tell your friends, tell your comic book store, tell your mom, tell your girlfriend, tell anybody who will listen. We appreciate your support and help. And
I told the collection guy about it. He didn't know what I was talking about.
So, excellent. All right. Well, Wood, thanks for stopping by. We appreciate it again.
Gentlemen, it was a pleasure. I appreciate it. Hopefully, I'll see you next week to do some celebrating.
Yeah, it will be definitely good. And
this week.
This week, yeah, the time shift there.
My bad.
Yeah. So, and sorry we couldn't go on for another hour and a half. You know, I didn't.
That's all right. I know. I got like an hour and a half to go figure out what I'm going to do with myself now.
I don't know how you guys do that at 11 o'clock on a weeknight. I'd be dying. I'm dying. We do this on the weekends and I'm dying. So it's
well, since you took me behind the curtain, I'll let you know we actually record at 9 o'clock Eastern.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Boo.
We used to record at 11, but one of us had a change in his job where he had to get up earlier, so we pushed it back to 9 Eastern, 8 Central, but we already had the URL in the brand name, so we figured we'd stay with the 11 o'clock because it would be silly to change it to 9 o'clock and
that's
have to explain
fine.
It.
That's
so.
Okay. That's all the little secrets that iFanboy has, you'd be surprised.
So.
Yeah,
exactly.
Connor doesn't even exist. It's an AI program I wrote about 2 years ago.
I was
going to
say he's automaton. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello.
Gordon the intern secretly writes every script. Gordon the intern writes every script.
Yeah, exactly. It's all Gordon. Yeah. He's pulling the levers and everything.
Who, by the way, is a crazy fucker. I mean, getting a tattoo like that and then having Darwin sign his pelvis that's hardcore.
The tattoo is beautiful, and I love Darwin's reaction to it where he's like, you fucking kids. Like, that's what it's like. So, excellent. All right. So until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Keith.
He's not coming back next week. He'll be around. He might be there. Can feast on the real one. Don't be in love with the autograph. Just be in love when you love that song.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.